Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He is Wes Hodkiewicz. We are coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, it was a rough day for the Packers on Sunday at Lambeau Field. 23-0, a shutout loss to the Baltimore Ravens that drops Green Bay to 5-5 now through 10 games, three games out of the lead in the NFC North, with the Minnesota Vikings improving to 8-2 in Minneapolis. And, boy, just a game that started out looking really promising. The Packers drive all the way down. Brett Hundley gets the offense to the 5-yard line, throws an unfortunate interception in the end zone. And then from there, it was sort of like a snowball that just kept rolling downhill, and the Packers couldn't stop it.
Yeah, the most maddening part of this loss, I think, for the Packers is how that first drive went, and maybe how the fortunes would have been different if they could have finished that drive, at least gotten a field goal there. They actually, again, for the fourth straight week in their scripted first 15 plays, really were able to execute.
Yep.
You come off the bat, you have the 17-yard pass to Jordy Nelson right in the get-go, a nice conversion there to get the ball moving downfield, that first down. And then you have that big sideline pass to Davante Adams, which ended up kind of being a precursor for his big day, 8 catches for 126 yards, a season high for him. But when it comes down to it, the production's nice, but points are all that matters. And in that particular case, Brett Hundley looks like he has, you know, Randall Cobb coming open on a little bit of a corner route out of the slot. You have Jimmy Smith, whatever the zone coverage they were in there, comes off of Davante Adams where he's lined up, drops back, jumps in front of the pass, and gets the interception in the end zone. So I look at it a lot like a chess match, Mike. That the Packers made all the right moves there in their first four or five moves. One spot, though, changes the entire complexion of the board, and for the Packers, they really, as you said, were trying to play from behind from that moment on.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly, as you said, what the Ravens were doing defensively there down on the goal line, whether they were in a man-to-man look, but they were actually playing zone, and they fooled Brett Hundley there, or if Brett Hundley did have a shot at Randall Cobb being uncovered in the end zone, but the Ravens simply adjusted right at the snap and did what they needed to do to cover up a potential deficiency in their defense. But whatever the case, Brett Hundley kind of went with his pre-snap read, thought he had Randall Cobb, didn't really make a post-snap read as
right.
to what was going on after the snap was in his hands, and threw the ball. And once that ball was out of his hands, it was like, oh no, because Jimmy Smith was right there.
Yeah, if it was a zone coverage, it was a really nice disguise by
yep.
Baltimore and how they designed it. If it was actually a broken play and a missed assignment, I mean, tip your cap to Jimmy Smith for coming off of his guy. Davante Adams said it wasn't a rub route. He wasn't going to be coming across the middle. So Smith actually reads it, can see that Brett Hundley's staring down Randall Cobb, and Cobb is going to be open there. And the way that Hundley releases it, it's tough. If he waits one more second, he probably sees Jimmy Smith coming over. Cobb wasn't entirely deep in the end zone yet at that point. Whatever the case may be, it's one that I'm sure he wants back. And unfortunately for the Packers, despite being able to move the ball that well that early, it didn't translate to points.
Yeah, and it was the first interception of three interceptions for Brett Hundley on the day, the first turnover of five turnovers for the Packers on offense. A couple of stats, honestly, that are tough to swallow here, Wes. The Packers getting shut out for the first time, actually 11 years to the day, November 19th, 2006, at home against the New England Patriots, 35-0 in Mike McCarthy's first season as head coach. And the first time the Packers turned the ball over five times in a game since October of 2007 in a loss at Lambeau Field to the Chicago Bears. So as out of character a game as things get in terms of this Packers regime, and at the end of the day, you know, you're just not going to win turning the ball over five times. The first three possessions of the game all ended in turnovers. We talked about the first interception. Hundley definitely tried to do too much on the second one. He was scrambling, threw off balance, tried to go deep down the field, and something that really wasn't there. That was intercepted by Eric Weddle. And then Devontae Mays, the rookie running back, his first NFL carry, he fumbles the ball in the Packers' third possession. So three possessions, three turnovers, and offensively things just never got better.
Yeah, the tough thing for the Packers in this, whatever the game plan was, I mean, obviously there's certain things you're going to know, certain things you won't. They definitely dedicated themselves to passing the ball more in this rather than running it. The run game, where they were really effective in that way against Chicago, for the most part got shut down, 25 carries for 75 yards in total. Jamal Williams taking over that spot, I thought, actually got off to a pretty solid start, was able to get those tough yards again, but just didn't really have that big breakaway run. And without those big plays, I think it was really difficult to start dictating the tempo of the game against that Baltimore defense. You've said it, Mike, from the very beginning. We talked about it all last week. 13 interceptions for them coming into this game. You knew what they were capable of, one of the best pass defenses in the NFL. And unfortunately for Brett Hundley, you know, they made a few plays on the ball, and it also translated into 13 points for the Ravens.
Yeah, for all the ups and downs through Brett Hundley's first few starts, the one thing that he had done really well was protect the football. And that got away from him against the Ravens. Four turnovers for Hundley, the three interceptions, plus a sack fumble by Terrell Suggs in the fourth quarter. The last two turnovers leading to, I believe it was the last 10 points for the Ravens late in the ball game that stretched from 13-0 to 23-0. And even at 13-0, you know, the Packers had some moments. They get a defensive stop, a penalty on the punt return that actually gets the Packers to start in Baltimore territory. Then they get stopped on 4th-and-1 and a turnover on downs. You get a 25-yard pass to Davante Adams to get you out of a hole early in the fourth quarter. Then the next play is a sack fumble. So every time something positive was looking like it could happen where you just need one score to get you back in the game, it just didn't happen for Green Bay on this day.
Yeah, the Ravens always had the answer. The Packers actually beat them in total yardage. They beat them in first downs, also beat them in total offensive plays by 10. But as you know, Mike McCarthy has talked about this before, when you go +3, +4 in the turnover margin, that is going to change the complexion of a football game. And in the Ravens, once they were able to start turning over the football and getting those short yardage opportunities, I think their average starting field position was the 47, they kind of protected from there what they were doing offensively, very conservative. And, you know, protected what they had as far as a lead was concerned.
Yeah, exactly. Just did what they needed to do to close out the game. So with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball here from the loss to the Ravens. Really a shame, because for all the defensive struggles we talked about over the last several weeks against the Lions, against the Saints, different moments, Packers defense really, on balance, played well enough to win this game. Yeah. And unfortunately, that effort was squandered by an offense that simply didn't hold up its end of the bargain.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned in the first segment, 47 Baltimore average starting field position.
Yeah.
That's tough when you're working with that short of field. And I think the adversity defense for Green Bay kicked in as well as it could have. I mean, you look at the two touchdowns that they scored, they were both on short fields. They got a touchdown there at the end of the game on that Alex Collins 3-yard run, which was after the third interception that Hundley had thrown out of his own end zone.
Right.
So that was actually the first time that they sort of capsized for any like substantial touchdowns. So, it's a difficult situation to be put in. But that being said, talking with Mike Daniels and Nick Perry, Clinton Dix, a lot of guys in the locker room, they were lamenting the plays they didn't make. When you have an opposing defense make 5 turnovers, 3 through the air, 2 forced fumbles and recovered, you have to find a way to match that. And Clinton Dix had a nice interception off of Flacco earlier in the game. But to him afterwards, the only one he wanted to think about is the one that he just narrowly missed overthrown ball.
A little bit earlier, yeah.
Earlier in the second quarter. So it's those types of plays that can be the difference for this thing. Ultimately, the Packers have to score points. That's the only way you're going to win. But defensively, they were able to stop the run again for the third straight week. I think there's positives for them to build off of. Unfortunately, ultimately, it just didn't land in result and win.
Yeah, the really felt to me that this game flipped at the end of the first half, because at the time, the Packers were, I believe the turnovers were 3-1. The Packers were -2 in turnovers, yet the game was only 3-0.
Right.
So you're counting your blessings there, because the defense has really stemmed the tide of what could have gotten out of control. But then the Packers have the ball with about 3 minutes left in the first half. They're approaching midfield. You're thinking maybe try to get that tying field goal before halftime. Back-to-back sacks pushes Green Bay back 25 yards. Then there's a low punt that's returned across midfield. Baltimore is in position to kick another field goal before halftime without even getting another first down, which they do to get it to 6-0. And then a long kickoff return to start the second half sets up Baltimore's offense. They go 59 yards, and I believe it was 4 plays. They're in the end zone. A great catch by Mike Wallace against really tight coverage from Demaryius Randall for a 20-plus yard touchdown. And suddenly it's 13-0. The last time the Packers had the ball, they were down 3-0, and they're on the 40-yard line. And then the next time they get it, it's 13-0, and the game has a completely different complexion. And it all started with the back-to-back sacks.
And it's the way you draw it up if you're John Harbaugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're calling the timeout there, I think, with 1:47 left in the first half to give your offense another opportunity. You have one of the best kickers in football, if not the best, in Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
You want to get the ball on his foot no matter what to get those 3 points. They get six there, take a six-point lead at halftime, and you come out and just run down, get your explosive plays, and that results in a touchdown as well. So that was ultimately the difference. As we said, otherwise they were forced to punt 7 times. They had the interception from Flacco there that Clinton Dix picked off. But they just needed to make those few plays offensively to be able to take advantage of what their defense was giving them.
Yeah, and as you said, as we talk about how what I thought was a pretty solid effort by the Packers defense, it's not as though the players in the locker room were like, hey, we did our thing. We're laying this on the offense or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not how these guys went about it. And I give them credit for that because they looked at it, as you said, as they needed to make more impactful plays. Joe Flacco came in the game with 10 interceptions. He did throw one, but Clinton Dix probably should have had 2 interceptions,
right.
and he knows it, and he said as much. Joe Flacco had fumbled the ball 5 times this year. The Ravens hadn't lost any of those fumbles, but the Packers never got the ball out. They sacked him 3 times, but they never got the ball out. There weren't those high-impact plays that the Ravens' defense was making, and at the end of the day, you want your defense to be better than the other team's defense. That's how the Packers looked at it. That wasn't the case, even though on balance, it was an effort that on a lot of days would have been good enough to win.
Right, and I thought Devon House probably had the best line and summation of this performance in saying, because it was thrown at him too, like, hey, did you guys play well enough to win this game defensively? And he said, listen, I mean, there's games where offense is going to score 40 points. There's games where they're not going to score any, and the defense just has to be consistent throughout all of that. There's times where you're going to play okay defensively and give up more than 30 points just based on what you're seeing. And there's times where you have to be able to keep it to single digits or a low-scoring number to keep themselves in it. The one thing I think that is a credit to the defense, and I'm sure they're not going to be waving any flags around and celebrating this in meetings this week, is they gave their team a chance to win.
Yeah.
Up until basically the last 2 minutes of that ball game, the Packers had a chance to get back within this thing, and it just didn't quite happen. So there's a lot to learn from it, considering some of the injuries that they had, how different guys stepped up. Kyler Fackrell gets his first sack of the year. Dean Lowry gets his second sack in 3 weeks. And then you got Clay Matthews getting his first since week 4 against Chicago. They did have plays. They just weren't as big as what the Ravens were producing.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the injuries that were going on, and we'll get to those and run those down after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, you mentioned the injuries that befell the Packers in this game. Significant ones in terms of 3 starters actually having to leave the ball game. Clay Matthews, as you said, gets his first sack since week 4 against Chicago, but then has to exit with a groin injury. Justin McCray, who we've talked about a lot in terms of him filling in all across the offensive line, he's been in at right tackle for Brian Bulaga. He has to leave the game with a knee injury,
yep.
Was it? And then the most significant one in terms of the potential, what looked like the worst injury as we saw it on the field, unfortunately, was to defensive lineman Kenny Clark, ended up being carted off the field in the second half. It was announced as an ankle injury, which I guess you can take as a good sign that it wasn't a knee, because I think we were all maybe afraid that it could be something even worse. But that being said, it obviously didn't look good that he had to be carted off the field. We'll find out what the update is. But a promising season for the second-year pro unfortunately gets cut short here.
Yeah, well, and we'll see exactly how everything plays out for him here. Hopefully it's not as bad as it was perceived. He does get carted off the field. I will say this. The one thing that gave me a little bit of solace with it, him tweeting back at David Bakhtiari when Bakhtiari was offering his well wishes, saying that he's going to be okay. We'll have to see what that definition of okay is. But
yeah.
I'll say this, Mike. I think defensively, there's been some good performances this year from different positions. Kenny Clark might be their defensive MVP right now, just based on what he does. I've said this before. I'll use the analogy one more time. He's a different player, but he's kind of become that Ryan Pickett type player, particularly when it comes to the run defense.
Yeah.
You're not going to look at a box score and be like, oh, that guy's a Pro Bowler, but he does so much to dictate those trenches. When Mike McCarthy talks about dominating the trenches, winning the line of scrimmage, Kenny Clark is helping accomplish that. And he's so athletic. He can glide down and cover towards the boundary. It's just there's so many different things he does for them. The one thing that basically is missing is the sack, but he's really been one of the most consistent players of that defense this season.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And the Packers' run defense has been pretty darn solid here the last several weeks. And run defense certainly is a team defensive aspect. Everybody needs to do their part. But what I'll say about Kenny Clark as far as the run defense goes is the position that he plays in the run defense. If you have a weakness there, it doesn't matter. I mean, your run defense is going to get blown up. Yeah. And Kenny Clark has been the most consistent presence in that run defense all season long for the Packers. And we'll see how long he ends up being out, whatever unfolds here. But the Packers are going to miss him in the middle of that defense.
Yeah,
line.
And that was the biggest thing. I think that this reminded exactly what Kenny Clark means to that locker room. I mean, you're talking about a young man, still only 21 years old. He walked in there. And, I mean, just they love him. Mm-hmm. So for him to go down, and I know there's a lot of strong feelings about his injury and exactly what was revolved around that particular play.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for David Bakhtiari, HaHa, Clinton Dix, Devon House, Mike Daniels, all these guys stepping up, and a credit to Clark, too. He's become one of the spokespeople now for this defense. Wins, losses, whatever, he's out there, he's answering all the tough questions. I think he's been a pro's pro, and for him to show that maturity at such a young age says a lot about him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and obviously we hope the best for Kenny Clark, that whether he gets back on the field sometime this season or gets recovered along the way, I think this is a guy who's got a potentially really bright future, you know, for the Green Bay Packers.
Absolutely.
On defense. But before we go to a break, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Picture this, you and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliner watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Sub's, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz, and Wes taking a look at what else happened around the NFL on Sunday. I mentioned at the top of the show the Minnesota Vikings improved to 8-2 on top of the NFC North, an impressive 24-7 home victory over the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams, the highest scoring offense in the league, they go into Minneapolis and only put up an opening drive touchdown and leave it to Minnesota's defense to make the game-changing play. That game was 7-7. The Rams look like they're heading in for a touchdown to take the lead. Minnesota strips the ball from the wide receiver at the 1 yard line. The Vikings recover, and the Rams didn't score again. And Minnesota just pulled away in the second half for an impressive win.
Yeah, they did, Mike. I think you got to give a lot of credit to Mike Zimmer for the way that this team is performing. They've Case Keenum has come in there, and he's not just a backup. He's a guy that wasn't even on the roster. He was in the LA a year ago.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, they lost Sam Bradford. They were already without Teddy Bridgewater. They lose Delvin Cook. They've taken some pretty heavy blows to what they felt was going to be a comparable offense, a good enough offense to complement their defense.
Yes.
And they still find a way. Latavius Murray, I think, is starting to see exactly, we're starting to see what he can bring to this offense. And when he gets a little bit more opportunity, although they're still kind of splitting the reps there. And defensively, there's very few teams in the NFL that you're like, okay, we'll put this in our defense's hands. Minnesota's had a lot of success with it, to be quite honest with you. I think this is probably their most impressive win of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. No question about that. They are 8-2. The Detroit Lions squeak out a three-point victory in Chicago. The Lions get a late, long field goal from Matt Prater. The Bears then miss what actually was a shorter field goal in the final 10 seconds of the game. So the Lions, two games behind the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC North. The Packers, three games back. And the other game that jumped out at me, Wes, was the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
The Washington Redskins score a touchdown with 6 minutes to go up by 15 points. But there was just no putting the Saints away. They come back with two touchdowns, get a two-point conversion right at the end of the fourth quarter to tie the game. They end up winning it in overtime. So the New Orleans Saints, after that 0-2 start, now 8-2, an 8-game winning streak, looking as close to unstoppable as the Philadelphia Eagles, who blew out the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, two very impressive performances. I'll start with New Orleans. The thing I like most about this for the Saints is we were talking the past couple weeks, they got the run game going, they got a better defense this season. But when you needed Drew Brees to win a ball game for you, he did it.
Yep.
And he could still get the job done throughout the air. 385 passing yards. They only attempted 23 runs in this game. Mark Ingram had the most with 11 carries. This was one where it ultimately comes down to the quarterback to steer you back, to get you back in a comeback victory. An amazing job by Washington to be really headstrong and go down there and dictate early on. But I think New Orleans is showing you that they are for real, and they can win those type of ball games.
Yeah, and then you look at the team right now that's on top of the NFC, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. They are 9-1, actually trailing the Dallas Cowboys in Big D 9-7 at halftime, and then the second half score 30-0 on the road against a division rival. I know the Cowboys are missing their left tackle. They're missing Sean Lee in the middle of the defense. They're missing Zeke Elliott, but 30-0 in the second half. The Philadelphia Eagles are one tough customer.
Yeah, Dallas actually ran the ball okay with Alfred Morris. The problem is Dak Prescott kind of showing those sophomore, I don't want to call it a slump, but that he isn't impervious to being an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he made so few mistakes last year. I think it set the expectations so high for him. Well, now he's starting to look like a young quarterback again. But Carson Wentz on the other side doing exactly what he has to do to manage that game.
Yep.
They get that big run from Ajayi, and they ran from there.
Yeah, definitely. And these top teams in the NFC, they look really, really tough. Still a few games to go and see what happens. But we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.